So obviously you're a clinical psychologist and you've worked with prisoners and offenders and you're now working with executives and managers. So it leads to the simple question. So what's the similarity between offenders and executives, or the differences between those two?
Oh, there's a big difference. The interesting thing is, before I worked with offenders, I used to work for an airline. I was a flight attendant for 5 years. So if you ask me the difference between passengers and offenders, not that much.
Welcome to the Hands On Business podcast. Where else are you going to come to get tips, tricks and advice on growing your business? As you know, what people tend to love about this podcast is that it is a place where you can hear real business leaders discussing systems, methodologies and strategies that they have used to help them catapult growth in their business. So I'm your podcast host, Hakeem Adebiyi, and I've grown several small businesses to multi-million pound enterprises and noticed that there wasn't really a place that focused on where I was, i.e. growing a small business. All of the content that seemed to be out there was about big business and often just a lot of theory and no practical implementable advice, which is exactly why I set up this podcast. So take a listen, enjoy, and start implementing the strategies that you hear on the podcast. Happy listening. Now, one of the most common questions that I get, not surprisingly, is how do you grow a business rapidly? Now, I hope this podcast continually helps people to answer that question and then take action, as we always delve into the key things which will enable you to do that. So whilst we've often talked about leadership, recruitment, listening, and other people-based aspects on the show, we have never really gone into any great detail into the role that the executives in a business play in business growth and how sometimes their blockages can lead to businesses struggling. So today I'm talking to Janine Mitchell, who is CEO and founder of Change for Success, which is a consultancy that focuses on consultancy for executives and managers. And we're going to be talking about the executive blockages to business growth. So welcome, Janine. Delighted you could join us today.
It was great to be here. Good to see you. Thanks for inviting me.
Thank you very much for coming on. So people won't be able to see from your background, but you're currently in Vietnam where you reside. So, not relevant necessarily to the podcast, but it may be. So just talk me a bit about how you managed to end up working out of Vietnam.
Yeah, sure. Well, yeah, great to be here. So, yeah, thank you for the introduction. So I run a business called Change for Success, which I founded back in 2014. So we're a well-being specialist, effectively. So I work with private clients. We work with corporate clients as well, helping them with their mindset, lower stress, be more productive, be more resilient. And I was in a really high-stress job for many years. I used to work with high-risk offenders. And I ended up in a marriage which became very abusive. And after several attempts, it was hard to get out of that marriage, as it always is in these situations. I managed to finally leave that marriage, and I just needed to get away as far as possible. So I actually I booked a flight to Bangkok, and I flew out to Vietnam back in 2011, so 12 years ago now. And I just traveled around Vietnam on my own for a month, and I just loved it. And I kind of came back into my life, and it was just the biggest transformation for me. So I started doing some internal work on myself as well, because I was really struggling with my mental health. I was in a really bad way, struggling with my confidence, stress, anxiety, self-belief, all that kind of thing. So I retrained, and I retrained as a hypnotherapist, EFT, otherwise known as Tapping Emotional Freedom Technique, an NLP practitioner, and I also completed a master's degree in clinical psychology. We set the business up, and back in 2014, and the business has evolved over the time, and we mainly work with executives, with managers, getting them to a place where they feel happy and feel a sense of inner peace, because a lot of executives are burnt out, they're really stressed out. And when we're stressed out, we're not making decisions properly, we're not thinking clearly, all this kind of thing. So this type of client that I do work with. So yeah, last year, 2022, I moved out, I relocated to Vietnam full time. And I've always loved Asia. I've been coming here for a long time. I run all my business online, so we see clients all across the world. A lot, most of my clients are in Europe, and it allows me to be based out here in this beautiful country. The beach is just over there. I'm in a great place called Hoi An, We've got some really big plans over here as well. We want to set up some wellness retreats over here. So that's one of the main reasons why I set up out here as well. So yeah, life in Asia is great. Can't complain. It's all good. So that's what kind of brought me out here initially. And then I took the leap last year to relocate here permanently. And as I say, we just run all the business online and yeah, everything's going great. Happy time. Exciting, happy time ahead.
So excellent. So it's an interesting one there, because your story itself is an interesting story, because you're talking about you've escaped an abusive marriage, you're burnt out in your corporate job, which is not unusual for lots of people in corporate jobs, especially we're going to talk about executives. So
yeah,
what was the real change? Because I talk a lot about mindset and actually, you know, changing the situation you're in. So how did you go from where you were to being in Vietnam and running a successful business? That takes a massive mindset shift.
Yeah, it did. And I was in a bad place back then. I looked about 10 years older than I do now. And I started working with somebody, and he was a specialist, and he was absolutely phenomenal. And I was just writing a post about this on LinkedIn this morning. I didn't want to ask for help. You know, a strong, independent female, don't need to ask for help. You have this, you know, this whole anxiety around asking for help, like it's a sign of weakness. I actually see it as a sign of empowerment. And that day I asked for help. And by the way, I didn't want the help. I was trying to cancel the sessions. All this kind of stuff was going on through my head. But that day that I asked for help and then took that help and did the work, it changed my life. Transformational. And the work we did the inner work here with mindset. We worked very intensively with my subconscious mind. Now, the subconscious mind controls at least 95% of who we are. So it's where all our stress resides, all our old programs, all our old beliefs. When I say belief, I don't mean religious belief. I mean beliefs about ourselves. We use the term limiting beliefs. So beliefs that keep us stuck. So, you know, I'm struggling with anxiety. I've got a lack of confidence. I'm scared of public speaking. These are all beliefs we have about ourselves that limit us, that keep us stuck, right? So I did all this real deep internal work on my mindset. And what we did, we created these deep internal shifts, which in essence allowed me to rewire my brain. It allowed me to clear those blockages you touched on at the start. It allowed me to clear all those blockages that were leading me to these old stories. You're not good enough. You won't make it. You're a fake. You're a fraud. You have no confidence. These are just old stories, by the way, but we tell ourselves these stories over and over. And this leads to this self-sabotage. It leads to this, this lack of belief that we can't achieve something. So I started doing this inner work, and I was skeptical at first, right? Like I said, I didn't want to ask for help. I was skeptical. I was thinking, how is this going to make a difference? And I started noticing these shifts and changes, and I was like, wow, this is powerful. And I kept doing the work, the internal work. But not only did I work with an amazing specialist who then became, he went on to become my mentor and my supervisor, and I've done a lot of training with him over the years. He's world class. Not only did it start shifting those internal beliefs, it allowed me to, you know, think bigger, a bigger picture. I was playing small back then. You know, I was in this really high stress job, and that just led to anxiety. It led to low mood. I employed the worst coping strategies, you know. So it's everything I teach my clients what not to do now, you know, because I wasn't taught any of this back then. And my background was in mental health. My background was in psychology. You know, we don't get taught at school. We don't get taught at college how to look after our mindset, our well-being, our mental health. I think things are changing a little bit now compared to what they were, but I think our school syllabus is still so outdated, you know. So when I get to work with these beautiful, wonderful clients, and we work with CEOs, we work with managers, we work with senior management teams, because when you've got a leader, a manager who's managing 5 staff, 10 staff, 100 staff, 1,000 staff, whatever it is, and if they're not performing at their best and they're feeling stressed out, they're feeling burnt out, they're feeling like they can't cope, they've got imposter syndrome, the belief that I'm not good enough, all this stuff that I just mentioned, they're going to really struggle to not only look after themselves, but look after the teams. So then when we work with those clients on a one-to-one, we then go and work with their teams, because I say when we work with leaders first and foremost, how we lead from the top, we lead by example, right? So if we look after ourselves, look after our own mindset, our inner world, then our outside world changes. By the way, our inner world is a complete reflection of what goes on outside of us. It's a bit of neuroscience in there, which I can come on to in a bit. So when we work with senior leaders, executives, and CEOs and get them to a good place, they can then manage their teams more effectively. We then do work with their teams, and we create that real, I guess, long-term cultural change, because change happens at the top and then we filter that down. So I love working with organizations who kind of get the well-being piece. They don't see it as an add-on, because the return on investment when you have happy teams, productive teams, I think the figures for every pound you spend, you get like a £7 return on your investment. You know, it's huge, because staff members are gonna be off less. There's going to be less turnaround in staff. There's going to be less training. This all saves millions. You know, I think the amount that we lose annually, you know, not only in the UK but worldwide, is multi-billion through sickness, through absenteeism, through stress-related illness at work. It's huge. So I really love working with companies who, you know, they want well-being embedded into their culture. And it's no coincidence those companies that are looking after their team's well-being and their team's productivity and the team's morale. By the way, your team, your workforce, is your biggest asset. Look after your team, they look after you. You've probably heard that before, right? But it's true. And when I worked at my old job, we were so stressed out. You know, we had huge caseloads. Our wellness wasn't looked after. That was one of the first things when I went into that job. I did all my training, and the training itself over 2 years, MVQ, degree, on-the-job work, it was so stressful. But the minute I qualified and went into division, all I could see was all these people been in the job for decades, stressed out, burnt out. And I thought, God, this, you know, I don't want that to be me in a year, 10 years. And I ended up becoming what that statistic. But the point to make is, I saw firsthand within this organization how you don't look after your biggest asset. Nobody wanted to be there. Everyone was stressed out. Long-term sickness was common. It was commonality. And then what happened? They bring in outside agency staff and spend huge amounts in addition. So this organization was hemorrhaging millions, but they couldn't see past the end of the week. And a lot of companies operate like that. It's sad to see, but, you know, unless you start to do the internal work on yourself and your staff, things aren't going to change short-term, let alone long-term. And these are the sort of companies that I love working with, so we can create that real deep inner cultural change. We've been working with some wonderful companies recently, and the feedback we've been getting and the reports and the results, you know, they're communicating better. They're already a happy company, but the happiness is increasing. With that increase in communication, they're going to be more productive. The staff are feeling happy because they're feeling valued, because they're being invested in. You know, so there's a whole remit for why this work is so powerful. So it starts with the mind, and then it works outward from there, if that makes sense.
No, it makes perfect sense. And I think I interviewed someone not that recently, but recently enough, who works in the mindset space as well. And he described it as happiness makes money, precisely for all the reasons you've just outlined, you know, taking care of your team, and they'll take care of you. So obviously you're a clinical psychologist, and you've worked with prisoners and offenders, and you're now working with executives and managers. So it leads to the... simple question. So what's the similarity between offenders and executives, or the differences between those two?
Oh, there's a big difference. the interesting thing is, before I worked with offenders, I used to work for an airline. I was a flight attendant for 5 years. So if you ask me the difference between passengers and offenders, not that much. A murderer or a night flight Tenerife. Anyone likes Tenerife, sorry, but yeah, a lot of passengers were very rude, because they just demanded your attention. They thought you were there to serve their every whim. Whereas when I worked with offenders, you had that sense of, you know, you could kind of tell them what to do, whereas you couldn't tell a passenger what to do, even though sometimes you felt like it. so offenders, executives. So first of all, when any client comes to work with me, whether it's an executive, a senior manager, that client, like, by the way, I love all my clients. I love this work. I'm so passionate about it. Why? Because we get to see change in a very short space of time. This is the main difference. So when I have somebody approach me, they come to work with me, we start working together. So it can feel like, I guess the first part is the anxiety around it at first, because like I said before, when I went to get help, I didn't want to get help because it's this, you know, I can do it all on my own. I don't need anyone. It's scary to ask for help. And by the way, when I went to see this specialist, my drive all the way there, I was pretty much crying all the way there. I was in a mess. But the minute I got there and saw him, I was like, I know I've come to the right place. So the initial contact, the connection can feel really hard, because it's like, this is pushing me outside my comfort zone. B, you know, I'm successful, I'm this, I'm that. It's seen as a sign of weakness. No, actually, we'll flip on its head. It's a sign of empowerment to ask for help. And C, I can do it all on my own. So there's a few different things going on here. So there's that anxiety around that. But actually, what I tend to find is when somebody starts working, I see this a lot with clients. Clients very often say, yeah, it's a bit strange when you see Janine at first. You've got to, you know, talk about things. Most of my clients are men, you know, as a man, you know, stiff upper lip, especially in England. You don't talk about your problems. You keep them to yourself. But that's quite quickly, within a session or two, very, very similar. We'll get a lot of similar feedback. Really look forward to sessions with Janine. Why? Because they can see and feel stuff shifting within themselves internally very, very quickly. So the difference between executives and offenders. So I used to work in very deprived areas of Manchester, Liverpool, and I did that job for 13 years. So when you had, and a lot of these, so I worked again, all with men. I did work with some victims at the start of my career, some female offenders, but throughout my career, 90% men. So a lot of these lads that I worked with, there was a lot of revolving doors. So they'd be in and out, in and out, in and out of prison. So most of these guys, they didn't want to be there. So when they're sat in the chair opposite you, the court has sent them, right? They're kind of forced to be there when they've been sent to prison. And you're working with them in prison, then they come out of prison, and you're doing further work with them to rehabilitate them, do work, you know, work with their offending behavior, what we call offense focused work, to get them to a place where you reduce their risk of reconviction. So there's going to be less victims and that sort of thing. So we do a lot of risk reduction work. But that person sat opposite you, do they want to be there? Yes or no? In the main, no, because the court has sent them. The court has sent them to prison. I mean, they've committed very serious offences. You know, generally, they don't want to be left on the street for too much longer. So there's a big difference. All these lovely executive managers, beautiful clients that I work with, who, as I say, I just love all my clients, because we see them create such huge shift in such a short space of time. So we've got these people that really want to be there. They want to do the work. They want to engage. And then when they see the shift, like, wow, this is transformational. This is making a change. And but on the other hand, you're working with these guys and they're in and out of prison, or they've been in prison for a long time. Don't get me wrong, we did have some success stories, but they were few and far between. You know, a lot of these guys just in and out, in and out, in and out. So as you can imagine, for somebody like me or anyone in that job, working with that person regularly, consistently over time, very, very stressful, because you're not only working with people who've committed horrific crimes, you know, they've committed a very violent offence, murder. I work with murderers. They've maybe committed a sexual offence. So when you're working with these perpetrators, and a lot of these people are in denial, they don't want to do the work. As an individual, you're working, taking that all home with you. That's why I ended up on burnout. I ended up just employing really bad coping strategies, you know. And then, as I say, I've got involved. My dad died young. My dad died. We lost my dad. Then I got involved in this relationship. We became married, and that became very abusive. So I was dealing with the stress from all angles. It was a very difficult time. Yeah.
And do you think that the work, because obviously there's lots of people who do what you do, but do you feel that actually your unique experience for working with offenders give you a unique perspective when working with executives?
I'd like to hope so. So the way I've talked about it in the past, and I coined this a while ago, I was like, you know, helping clients get out the prison of their own mind, because you're helping some of these men out of prison and reintegrate into society. And like I say, there's some guys that I work with that did really well. You know, they went on to have successful lives. They got a job. They got into a relationship. But a lot of these guys would just go back to the same old ways. It's easier to go down that path, go down the path where that's all they knew. All they knew was going back to an old neighborhood. That's all they knew. Very deprived areas. All they knew was alcohol, drugs. Being expelled from school since a very, very young age. They're using drugs from very, you know, some of them were 8, 9, 10 when they start using drugs, you know, drugs, alcohol onwards. So to come out of prison after a month, a year, 10 years, whatever, and then say, right, I'm going to go down a different path, that's actually the harder thing to do.
Do you get a unique perspective having worked with prisoners to then working now with executives compared to other people?
Yeah. Yeah, so you said that, but working people get them out of the prison of their own head, because when you're working with, an executive and they're in kind of like high stress or they're burnt out or they're, you know, faced with real deep-seated imposter syndrome or they feel like a failure or a fraud, all this stuff, or the personal life is crumbling around them, you know, the marriage is falling apart, which I see a lot of, they feel like a prisoner in their own mind. So if we can start, you know, we can get the key to undo that cell door and get in that mind and say, you don't need to be a prisoner of all these old thoughts that are keeping you stuck, these old behaviors that are keeping you stuck, these old ways of being that are keeping you stuck, you know. So if we can start to unlock that, and as I said before, with my work and the work that I do, rewire some of these neural pathways and rewire some of the brain structures. So yeah, I think in essence, because I especially kind of, this might be a bit contentious, but I don't care. I saw this a lot specifically in lockdown around COVID, everything kind of went online. And so a lot of my corporate work, I lost a lot of corporate work before around kind of March 2020, because all my work was in person. And all these contracts ready to go. So I was doing a full-time master's the year before while running the business. And what I saw a lot of, these kind of well-being specialists popping up out of nowhere, and you kind of check their credentials, the credibility. And this kind of well-being just was like a buzzword. It was this. So if I break it down, well-being, let's look at mental health, because that mental health is well-being effectively. I've been in mental health now for over 20 years, and I've worked with thousands of people over the years. Mental health is very complex. You can't just, you know, decide on the back of a cornflake packet, oh, I'm going to become a, you know, a mental health coach. And I understand that people have had their own background that they bring to that. But I think the credibility piece is really important. And I would just like to give some advice to people who are listening. If people are looking at working with somebody to support them on their, you know, their journey, to help them with their mental health or mindset, you know, it's okay just to do your due diligence. Just check out the people that you want to work with. I always, if you said to me now, Janine, I'd like to work with you, we would always have an initial conversation, because I might not be the right fit for you. You might not be right for me. I might need to refer you on to a colleague or something like that, because it's the specialism in terms of what do you want to work on. So I always say, do your due diligence. If you check that person out and ask for their credentials, you know, if you have that half an hour with them and it doesn't feel right or it doesn't feel like the right fit, you know, you're not tied into anything. You're not obliged to sign up with them for 6 months, 12 months. I have a lot of clients who come to me and they've been working with, you know, so-called professionals for a bit of time. They've not really got anywhere. They're still in the same space they were a year ago. And that, or 10 years ago or 20 years ago. And that really upsets me, because when I work with clients, because I'm so passionate about what I do, it's about ensuring the client goes down the best road possible for the work that they do. So check out all the credibility, check out the credentials, ask, you know, check out the website and say, you know, what, and if they say, yeah, of course, you know, I've got credentials in this, qualifications in this, you know, speak to all the clients. Because I always, if somebody is unsure about working with me and they you know, they want to have a think, because obviously it's investment as well. I say, look, you know, go and speak to some clients who've done the work. Clients will always say, oh, if there's anyone else you need to speak to, like, let me know, because they're in such a good space, or like that. That's what they say. So do those checks. That's okay, because there's far too many people for my liking, kind of rocking up, and they've got some kind of they've just gone on Udemy and they've got some kind of an online course that they paid 10 quid for. It's not going to cut it. I'm sorry. You need that credibility. You need the experience. I know we've all got to start somewhere, but I worked for hundreds and hundreds of man hours even before I started to set the business up, with all my training, my background, my experience, even before I started charging clients like a minimum amount. I charged my first clients that I worked with next to nothing just to build the hours up and the credibility, you know. So it's really important to do that, definitely.
Well, I suppose it's just the same with anything, isn't it? I mean, if you were going to get a fitness trainer, for example, you're not going to just pick somebody, some random guy who says, yeah, yeah, well, I keep fit, so I now want you to train me. You're going to go online. You're going to do all your research. You're going to speak to people who've trained before. And you're going to hope you've got some kind of official coaching qualification. And the mind is if not as important, but that more important than the body when it comes to it. Because if your mind's right, you probably get your body right. It's probably difficult to get into that space where you're super fit if your mind isn't right in the first place.
Exactly. And you'd be surprised. You'd be surprised. I see it a lot. I can spot the signs a mile off. That's the advice I give. You know, just see who's the right fit for you. Who do you have a conversation with? I was looking at. I've worked with various coaches over the years. I'm working with some incredible people on my business, in my business now. And one of the people I'm working with at the moment, like, he's phenomenal. He's world class. I feel so grateful and in gratitude that I'm working with him, because I've been following him for a long time. We work together, and you know, I've checked out a few different coaches. And one, I had a conversation with somebody, and somebody else. It just didn't feel like quite the right fit for me. And like I said, I've been following this guy for a while, and so he was, you know, he's on this pedestal. He's amazing at what he does. And when we had an initial conversation, I had a consult with him. I think the minute we started speaking, and I mean, that initial consult blew me away anyway. It was phenomenal. But I was like, wow, I really get this person gets me. I get him. And we get each other's energy. And I then went on to work with him. And we're still working together now. And it's been incredible. It's been such a journey so far. So that just fit for me. So it's really, really important, definitely. And that took me a while to find him. I was looking at certain people. And, you know, so it does take time. And that's okay.
And it's worth it, isn't it? You know, it's your mental health. So it's not something that should be taken lightly, and therefore you want to make sure you get the right person. You don't want to just let anybody in your mind. Let's put it that way. So, and you were talking about rewiring. Go on.
No, I was just going to say, as I said before, you know, mental health is complex. You know, that does control everything. It controls our behaviour, our thought patterns, our actions. It controls everything. You know, so, and sometimes I think the mental health kind of label, there's still quite a lot of taboo around that. You know, we talk about it a lot more openly now, but I always say we've all got mental health like we've got physical health. So, you know, like you said there, we go to a specialist. So if you want to get your car fixed, you take it to the mechanic, and then he says, right, your car's ready, that's 500 quid, please, you get your car back. Because you wouldn't drive your car dangerously along the motorway. Our mental health, we've all got mental health like we've got physical health. Like you say, after COVID, we might have got a bit lazy, watched a bit too much Netflix, or we're sat in our houses. Think, right, you know, I want to get a bit healthy now. I want to do some exercise. So you might go to the gym more, you might walk more, you might run, you might train, whatever, or you might eat more healthily. Do the same for your mind. That controls everything. So we all have mental health like we have physical health. There shouldn't be taboo around this. And like I said earlier, you know, it's okay to ask for help. It shouldn't be scary. It's actually empowering to do that. And once we do that, everything changes. Everything changed for me. And I just kind of say, if I could make those changes back then, because I was in a mess, like, if I could make those changes and just transform my life, which is what I did, and then, as I say, went on to retrain and set up the business, the consultancy, and we've just grown and grown and been able to run a business that I love, you know, out in Asia, and we've got some exciting plans out here, you know, it's dream life, you know, which I didn't expect back then, because back then, like, life was just a nightmare. Quite the opposite to what it is now.
Well, I can imagine when you mentioned your story, and then in terms of, because you're obviously a mental health advocate and you look at well-being, do you think that the term, because you said people are talking more openly about it, which they are, do you think that sometimes people are talking about it too often in terms of everything seems to be mental health now? So some people, I mean, so lots of people will say, well, actually, that's just a lack of resilience, for example. Any little slight knock, people say, oh, well, they've got mental health issues. What opinion do you ascribe to when it comes to the way people talk about mental health now, especially in the media?
I think it's really important to be open, just have a conversation, because even if, you know what it's like, if you're not feeling too great, you know, you're not feeling too great in yourself, and somebody just reaches out to you, whether it's just a friend, or even if you're down the pub with a couple of mates on a Friday night and a friend checks in, you know, are you okay? That can make all the difference. Just asking somebody, are they okay? And just being open about a conversation. Yeah, I'm not feeling too great, actually, you know, because I'm very passionate about, you know, men's mental health, you know. Suicide is the biggest killer in men under the age of 45 in the UK. You know? So many men and women take their own lives when, if they just felt more heard, maybe more supported, just felt they've been able to open up a bit more, just speak to somebody. So I think it's good to be open. It's good to be open, have a conversation, you know, because I think that's critical just to keep the conversation going. You know, like you said there, you wouldn't kind of like sneak to the gym and go to the gym and, you know, going to the gym, you say, oh yeah, I've been to the gym tonight. Yeah, I feel good. That's seen as a good thing. So why should, you know, because going to the gym's great, you know, doing any sort of physical exercise is great because it's releasing those natural happy chemicals, the endorphins. But you wouldn't like sneak around and you know, hide that you've gone to the gym. Yeah, I've been to the gym today. You feel quite proud. Yeah, I feel good because I've been there for an hour, couple of hours. I've done loads of stuff, bit of cardio, lifted some weights. I feel good. Now I can go and, you know, chill out and, you know, hopefully get a good sleep. So no, I think it's important to be open with this conversation, definitely.
Oh, excellent. And you know, executives are no different, which is obviously why you've migrated to that. So executives have all the same problems as everyone else has. So you've obviously developed the executive, what you call the executive code. So what is the executive code and how does it help executives to unblock some of these issues that they may have?
So I created something called the executive code. And so what happens is a lot of executives get to the point where what I call the executive paradox. They get to a point where they become so successful that actually it starts to ruin their life in so many different ways. So everything crumbles around them, their personal life. Maybe they're not as present at home. They're not as present for their children, their family, their partner, the wife, the husband. And their mental health suffers, their physical health, and stress is just at an all-time high. So executive gets to this point where they're so stressed out, they're so burnt out, it affects them mentally, physically, emotionally. But it's not only affecting the work life, it's actually affecting their home life as well. So it's affecting all these different areas. And what happens is they start using all these strategies, what I call mask, cope and distract. So we use strategies to cope. We use strategies to mask, distract. So all these, there's like overlap in these three areas. So things like, oh, rather than, you know, look at that stress, I'll just drink some alcohol. But then alcohol starts to become problematic. Or I'll just reach for the bad food. I'll do this, I'll do that. So we can have all these kind of poor coping strategies. I was the master of poor coping strategies years ago, right? So we use all these strategies, or we'll just binge a load of TV. So we have all these strategies, but actually underneath there's this spiral, this what I call this executive kind of spiral, which is going down and down and down and down. And what happens is all these things, you know, start to spiral, and it spirals, gets to a point where it's too late. There's almost like a point of no return. And it's really critical to ask for help and get support before that happens. So not only are there issues in the personal life, there's also problems at work as well. Because when we're stressed out, we're feeling more burnt out, we're less likely to make decisions well. We don't think we should with as much clarity. Why? Because when we're in a state of stress, the way the brain works, and bring a bit of neuroscience into this, the way the brain works, if we're in a state of stress, let's say fight or flight, we've all heard of fight or flight. But if we're fight or flight was very adaptive for us back in the caveman years. So we needed that fight or flight to survive. We're in survival all the time. But actually, all these years later, we're not generally in danger mode, danger zone, like our caveman ancestors were. But when we're in all these executives are in this, because they've got all this pressure, you know, these time constraints, everything, there's all this pressure that's building. So when we're in this high state of stress, the way the brain works, we're going into these mini fight or flights all the time, and pressure, stress, all this, it rises. It gets to an apex, right? Something has to give. We can't go. How much water? It's going to overflow. We wouldn't leave our car till 10 years later after the MOT. We get our car MOT within a year. I mean, we might get arrested by the police if we don't, right? So you've got to get your car MOT. So why not do the same with the mind? So it affects our personal life, our professional life. So knowing the code, it's spotting these signs before they're too late, first and foremost. And then it's been able to work with the power of the mind so you can start shifting some of this stuff around. Because quite a lot of the time, the way we operate will be based on old patterns as well, old ways of being. So I mentioned before, when we're in this high state of stress, old thought processes might pop up. Or I'm in too deep here. This fear of failure, this fear of, you know, not being good enough. Because we're reaching this point of success as an executive. We're at our pinnacle. So we're in that executive position. We feel like, right, we've reached it. But actually, all these things are falling apart around us. And the reason why I'm very passionately talking about this now is most executives don't see it until it's too late. Because like we said before, they don't want to talk about it. It's easy just to run around them. So they need to know what the signs to look out for. And then on the flip side of that, they need to know what to do differently to start improving and working on the mind, as we said before, which controls everything. And when that poor little mind is just struggling a little bit, which is going to, because that is going to overflow at some point. If we just go up and up and up and up, we can get to the top, but something has to give. So, and then that's obviously where I come in, and we do the specialist work and we do the internal work. But the reason why I'm very passionate about this and I talk about it openly is because I'd rather have people be, even by listening to this podcast, being proactive rather than reactive. Because if you're reactive, something's going to go badly wrong. Your wife is going to walk out on you. It's too late. Your children are going to disappear. They're off to university. Your husband, you know, you're going to end up really physically unwell. By the way, the stress-related thing in relation to our physical health and our mental health, in the UK alone, 70% of visits to the doctors, to the GPs, is through stress-related illness. Because people go to the doctor and they expect that magic pill. Oh, yeah, can you just give me some pills? It's not really going to deal with all these underlying dirty washing that's been going on for the last month, year, decade. Some of this stuff's been going on for decades. So that's where we come in to do the work. And it is powerful shifts that, as I said before, we see in a short space of time. So we could get, I guess people in this position as well, they're really busy, aren't they? So senior managers, company owners, CEOs who are in charge of, you know, hundreds of staff, whatever, they're very busy. They could go and do that work on their own. But that's going to take a long time. Whereas if I want to get my car fixed, I could, you know, go to college for 3 years and learn to become a mechanic. I can't bother doing that. Take it to the guy down the road. 2 hours later, my car's fixed. You know, we wouldn't think about doing that, would we? You know, so it's the same kind of thing. It's about doing that internal work, accelerating that process. And then when that's done, relationships improve, performance increases. We have that real sense of inner happiness, because a lot of executives are that focused on their work and focused on their, you know, the career. Everything else starts sliding. And the amount of clients that I've worked with, most of my clients are men. Oh, my wife kind of wants to meet you because their marriage has improved a lot, of the relationship, because they're a lot more present. They're there for the children. I had one client who reached out to me a couple of years back, and he was managing around 100 staff. And he said, look, he said, I know my children are still young. They're like 7 and 9. He said, I know if I don't do the work now, I want to be more present for my children. I want to be there. I know time will go like that and they'll be off to university. Because these are precious years when your children are young. you know? So it's having that balance. It's been able to do your job well with all these tools and techniques and strategies that we learn, so we can be more productive, we can be happier, more resilient at work. We can also be more present at home, because it's about having that balance. You know, I saw a quote the other day, and I had to do a post on LinkedIn about it, saying, said no person ever on their deathbed.
Yeah. I thought that.
It's so critical to do this work, you know. And I don't mean by work, I mean like homework, you like you used to get to school. I mean, it's fun, engaging work. You've done the hard bit. This is the fun bit once you do the work, because you're learning techniques, you're learning tools, you're learning strategies to up level. And once you up level and you go to that next level, you've learned so much in this space of time, 3 to 6 months, let's say. You've learned that much, you're up level, and you're never going to fall down that cliff ever again. You're never going to fall down that mountain, because you've up leveled and you know the tools, the techniques, the strategies to implement, and it becomes a lifestyle choice. And it's no coincidence, all those top CEOs, managers, it's no coincidence those that are running, you know, happy, successful teams are looking after their own well-being, they're looking after the team's well-being. You know, it's no coincidence, and that they're, you know, they're achieving recognition within the industry as well. So it's all connected.
So in terms of, because you've talked a lot there in terms of the executive code about the executive paradox, success, and using strategies, mass cope and distract. If you were to sort of like wrap it up, so your elevator pitch, someone said, well, just tell me quickly what I would get from the executive code. What are the, say, top five things you'd mention?
So as I say, you'd learn just to rewire all this old stuff that's been keeping you stuck. Because what happens is people get stuck and they kind of think, oh, you know, they secretly hope things will change. But actually, will tomorrow be any different? Will next week be any different? Will next year be any different? Because if you heard the saying, if you always do what you always did, you'll always get what you always got. So some things need to change, because unless you change this up now and you be proactive rather than reactive, things are going to go wrong. And so many people leave it till it's too late. Their back's against the wall. They've had a stroke. They've been told they've got type 2 diabetes. Their wife, husband, or partner has left them. Too late. The children have gone off, you know? This is about being proactive rather than reactive. And once you're proactive, everything changes. Because we only get one shot, right? The amount of times I've worked with clients and, oh, you know, I wish I came to see you 10 years ago. I'm like, well, you're doing this work now, you know? Some people still haven't done this work decades ahead. So once we do the work and things change, it's the longer term strategy, and then everything shifts. Powerful stuff.
Okay. No, it certainly is. I think that, as I say, the mind is a powerful thing to waste, as they say. And one of the things you mentioned there was 70% of visits to the doctor is through stress related illnesses. So that's one of the key metrics, I suppose, when businesses are looking and they look at their sickness rate. So how do you measure your success? You know, you go in, you've got the executive code, you're working with executives and executive teams. How do you measure success? How do you measure the unblocking of that executive issue?
Well, when we're working on a one-on-one, that's self-measure, self-report. And when we're working with teams, we have some psychometric testing. So we measure teams, we have some questionnaires that we speak. So because when we're working with teams, it's not about just a short-term fix. It's about where they are now, and we want to see improvements, actually, you know, numerical improvements in terms of productivity, happiness levels, morale, all that kind of stuff. We want to see improvement now in 6 months, 12 months, because it's a longer-term plan. It's not just a quick fix. That's why I'm not a fan of mental health first aid training. Because it's very basic. It's just a sticking plaster. It's not, it's better than nothing, but it's not really going to lead, you know, support the leaders and help with those kind of longer term ingrained old, you know, patterns and issues within the team. Whereas if we work more effectively within teams over a longer period, we can then measure where we're up to now, where we're going to be in 12 months, because this is a longer term strategy. It's not just a sticking plaster. And then, like I say, people don't kind of want to invest, because they see it as an add-on. It's an investment. It really is. Because when we make that investment, you get it back times 10, you know. So it's, it makes a huge difference. And by the way, what you touched on there before, what I forgot to mention, the mind is totally underutilized. It's so powerful. But we're just in this state, and we're being distracted all the time, right? We're being distracted by phones, by social media, by the news. And I just teach some basics to help people be less distracted, because people say, I've not got enough time. Well, you've just spent half an hour flicking through your phone on Facebook. You've just spent the last 2 hours in total of your day just glued to the news. Like, well, how's that going to enhance your life? It's not going to make any improvement to your stress levels whatsoever. But you've wasted 2 hours in the last 24 hours on the news.
So just on that, how do you, because distraction is one of the big time stealers and doing things that you shouldn't be doing. So how do you get people from that distracted state to be more present and actually focusing on the things that matter?
So the only place we can be is the present. But so many people are over there. So many people are in the past. Most of us are either in the past or we're in the future. So when we're in the past, we're addicted to our old emotions of the past. So we're in a place such as a low mood. We're feeling sad. We're feeling angry. We're feeling resentful. We're feeling upset. So we're in the past, even if just for one minute, or we're in it for like years. We're in the past, basically. Or if we're in a state of anxiety or worry, if we're worried about something that might or might not happen yet, you're over there, you're in the future. So we're being distracted, we're all over the place. So we find it very hard to be present. Present is the only place we can be, as I say. So when we learn techniques and strategies to kind of switch off, to be in the moment, to relax. So when we're in a state of stress, we're in a very high brainwave, we're in what's called beta brainwave. But when we just lower those brainwaves down and we just feel more relaxed, we feel more present, can employ strategies such as mindfulness, meditation, just to get in a more relaxed space, the brainwaves lower. So we go into what we call an alpha brainwave. And that's actually where change takes place. It's where we make greater change. When we're in a state of a constant high stress, it's just going to lead to poor decision-making, lack of clarity, lack of focus. So it's about learning some very powerful techniques and strategies to be more present. And once we're more present, as I say, we can be more focused, more clear, and stress just automatically lowers. And it becomes part of a lifestyle choice. Like if you said to me today, you said, right, Janine, I'm going to go to the gym and I'm going to go and get a six pack. That's not going to happen in one session, right? So you've got to, you know, if you want to get a six pack, you've got to go to the gym, you know, 4 or 5 times a week. You've got to train. You've got to eat properly. You've got to get good sleep, all these things. So it's like anything, you know, it becomes part of a lifestyle choice, integrating the gym into it. It's like anything. So this is almost a lifestyle choice. And by this, I don't mean, you know, you have to, you know, be in the space where you want to get a six pack, but it's just integrating things within to your lifestyle. And it doesn't need to take hours a day. You don't need to be like a Zen monk on a hill for 8 hours a day. Just integrating small techniques into your life, 5 minutes, 10 minutes. We've got about 170 hours in a week. You can squeeze 5 minutes into a day, 10 minutes. And that, once you start doing that every day and start rewiring the brain, make that habitual change, everything else shifts. It's really powerful.
Yeah, again, I think meaningful change comes from small, consistent efforts, doesn't it? Rather than, the example I always use is if you take a rock and you pour 10 tons of water on it, nothing happens. If you drip water on it over the next 50 years, you'll destroy the rock. It might be a little bit longer than 50 years, but you get, you know what I'm saying? Okay, so on that, because we're coming to the top of the hour, so if there was one or two things you were to suggest that are going to help executives move from a blockage to help the business grow, what would those things be, just to wrap it up?
Well, first and foremost, the blockage is just an old pattern. That's all it is. But it becomes so familiar, the blockage of stress, mindset, whatever it is, it becomes so familiar. It almost becomes like a badge of honor, status, this whole hustle culture. I'm not knocking hustle culture. But so first of all, it's just a pattern. It's an old program. So if you can learn that that's just a pattern, learn that it's probably not even your fault. It's just an old story. It's probably not even your story. It's the story of somebody else. You learn that's just an old pattern. Once you start to break down that pattern and realize you can start to change it around and maneuver that, like you say, bit by bit, and actually change can happen a lot quicker than you might think. And once you start to make these integral changes and work with the power of the mind, which is extremely powerful, gets underutilized, and then you see, oh my gosh, all this power in there I didn't even know about. It's like recharging your phone. You charge your phone up Same kind of thing. You can charge that mind. That mind sometimes is just on 5% battery. We want to get it up to 95, 100%. We can do that a lot quicker than you might think. So they're just all programs. They're just all stories. They're just all ways of being. And as I say, we can do it on our own, but I'd rather just take my car to the mechanic than spend 3 hours in college. Three years in college. It just accelerates that process to get our head battery up from 5%, where the back phone battery is running out, to a nice, fully charged battery of head, of mind. If that makes sense.
It makes perfect sense, and I think that's a perfect place on which to stop. I like that phrase, I'd rather just take my mind to the mechanic. And I think when we start looking at it like that, rather than being embarrassed about it, or, oh, well, you know, I'm a man, I need to be at a cope. And you think, actually, the mind is, I mean, I often say the mind is just a muscle. It's not exactly, but the mind is a muscle, and you need to train it like you train any other muscle. So thank you very much for actually speaking to me and talking about, you know, the executive code, the executive blockages, and the things that you can do to overcome that in terms of changing the pattern and effectively rewiring your brain. All of Janine's details will be in the podcast description. So if you want to take your mind to the mechanic, then the mechanic is here. So you can contact Janine for all of the details that I'll leave in the podcast description. So thanks very much, Janine Mitchell.
Thank you, Helen.
So they say the mind is a terrible thing to waste, and Janine Mitchell goes into that in quite some detail and exactly how you can avoid stress, how you can actually, as she says, take the mind to the mechanic and get it serviced. Why on earth would you treat the mind any different than the body, as Janine said? And, you know, she talks about the executive code. She talks about how, you know, you need to really understand the mind, understand those blockages that you may well be having in a work environment. Because if you are not taking care of your mind, you're not taking care of your business. And don't forget to check out the show notes at www.thesalesaccelerationformula.com. And as always, subscribe, like, and share with your friends, colleagues, and anyone else who you think may be interested. But most of all, keep the feedback coming so that we can continue to improve and give you more of what you like. Hope you enjoyed this as much as I did, and as I always do, keep listening and keep growing.